Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. I'm your host Ace, and joining me are Artura.
Hello everyone.
And Gozugoz.
Hi.
In today's episode, we're talking about Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva, which released in 2009. I chose this one because I wanted a break from fighting anime that had no fighting. It was animated by PA Works and OLM, the companies behind the Aquatope on White Sand, which we covered last season, and Pokemon, making this the third thing we've covered that's partially made by OLM. PA Works also made the animated sequences in the Professor Layton games. Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva has a MyAnimeList score of 7.63. The plot summary that I have, and hopefully you two prepared yours without me reminding you.
Totally, I'm not writing it right now as we're talking.
Yeah.
Professor Layton has been invited to a special performance, but it might be more special than he thought.
I love it. I have Professor Layton and his first apprentice, Luke, set out to solve the eternal life after they receive a letter from an old colleague of the professor's.
Yeah, here's mine. The prof reminisces about one of his earliest adventures. He recalls how he attended an opera after receiving a curious letter/invitation from his former student. They call him Layaton for a reason, if you know what I'm saying. And then Team Rocket appeared.
Oh my god. Why do I keep letting you do this? Okay, so we'll start off with what's everyone's experience with Professor Layton? Arturo?
I learned it existed yesterday.
Oh, God. Gozugoz, what about you?
I recall seeing a trailer for a game, for a crossover game, Ace Attorney, Professor Layton. That's all.
Okay, well, I bought my daughter a DS off of eBay a number of years ago once her DS stopped working, and it actually came with a copy of a Professor Layton game. I never got around to playing it. Then I decided that we were going to cover this movie, and then I watched this movie, and then I played Professor Layton and the Miracle Mask on 3DS. Well, 2DS. So I have gotten around to playing a Professor Layton game, and I'll talk more about it towards the end of the podcast, I'm sure. So the movie itself, as you said, Gus, it starts with like present day, because it's set between a couple of the Professor Layton games. There's loads of these games, it turns out. And he flashes back to one of the earliest cases that they covered. And he receives a letter invitation asking him to come to this performance.
I didn't actually catch that he was invited to the performance. What I thought was that he had been invited to go because they needed help, and then they had been at the performance to check something out. Was I wrong?
It was a bit confusing. Like, they move back and forth at the start. Like, it's not clear if they first saw, like, first I thought that they first saw the opera and then they were driving over. That's what I thought. But then it turned out that it was a flash forward and a flashback. It was a bit of a confusing opening. And I mean, they start with completely different case and then they go back to the actual plot of the film. Like, it's a flashback, it's a forward flash within a flashback. Stuff like that.
Okay, so it actually starts with Professor Layton is solving this case by putting some gears in place and making the clock tower start, you know, clocking again, and then says, and then points at this old woman accusingly saying, "You did it," and turns out it's some weird guy with a mustache in a disguise.
He flies away.
And then they go, the police chaser after him. So for some reason, we then cut to the apartment and they're listening to a record of this performance that they would then go and watch.
Wait, I thought that they were listening to the theme, which then reminded them of the performance.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Okay, I misunderstood what Ace said.
Oh, I don't know if Ace meant that, but this is what happened, I think.
I thought I meant that. Right from the start, in the dub, Luke is narrating. If you watch the sub, and if you turn on the Japanese audio, it's just some random person narrating.
Wait, it's a random person?
Yeah, it's just some dude.
I could have sworn that was Luke from what I heard, but since I wasn't super good at keen at understanding their differences yet.
Well, at least right at the start, it's some random person with a really deep voice. It's definitely not a kid.
Oh, when they're talking about the clock tower? Yeah, One of the first things that caught my eye about the movie, is that I really like the animation of it. It has a unique style that, sure, you wouldn't be able to tell it's from 2009, but it's actually really pretty.
I'm just glad they all have noses. That's something in modern anime that really winds me up. People not having noses.
I was shocked, though, that Professor Layton looks so different from everyone else. He kind of just stands out like a sore thumb. It almost feels like he should be. Yeah, that's what's interesting. I love it because usually it's the side characters that are just the poorly animated ones.
Yeah, I thought like the animation was really good. And I think all characters had looked pretty unique.
Yeah.
Like I never had problem distinguishing them from each other.
Yeah, this movie is very good for people who suffer from face blindness.
Yeah, it actually really is because everyone's so unique and so different. And I really appreciated that because it like they had really cute animations as well.
As they're driving to watch the performance, solve the case, whatever it is. The woman who's driving the issue an apprentice.
Assistant,
sorry. Yes, because she has a go at the kid saying he's an assistant. And he says, no, I'm an apprentice, not an assistant. Anyway, she drives very dangerously and there doesn't seem to be any point in it.
I really appreciated the fact that she's just driving really dangerously and Professor Layton's just there, readjusts his hat and just continues reading.
Yeah, it seemed a bit out of place, and like I just took it as an anime trope. Like you have that character that's reckless and whatnot, but yeah, it seemed out of place to have that. Like there's that trope, we need to have it. We need to have that character.
And then we're treated to this opera, and only the professor and Luke start clapping afterwards. I just wrote down, damn, tough audience.
Yeah, some people clap, but it's so half-hearted.
Yeah, fucking assholes.
I actually thought the music in the opera was actually really pretty.
Yeah, it was. It was very good.
Yeah, like, I mean, appropriately so for the whole film, since the music is an important part of the plot. The music, I thought, was really good. And yeah, there was a few times when it swelled up, and I was feeling it.
Yeah, I was a big fan of how well the music was made. It actually caught my attention quite early on, and I was really satisfied with the way it sounded.
I was quite impressed with I forget what the name of it was, but this organ that was actually 12 different instruments.
Its entire orchestra is, oh gosh, what was the name?
It was designed to be, to replace an orchestra. It's like, oh, well, don't tell musicians that.
Like one person band, one man band, that guy who walks around in the city with a guitar and drums on his back.
The Detrigan is the name.
It's not a bad name, to be fair.
I mean, it's supposedly, according to the wiki, means a Detrigigant, as a giant machine designed and built by Jane Descolle. So like, that's interesting. I actually really liked it. I thought it was really pretty. It also looked really kind of steampunky, which seemed to be kind of a, not a theme per se, but I really did like the fancy setting that the movie took place in.
Yeah. Once the performance is over, we find out that people didn't go there to watch the opera. They went there to win a competition, a contest to be able to live forever, and we're introduced to what appears to be the bad guy. He's wearing a mask, a pirate hat, and then Inspector Grosky runs up to arrest him.
Well, as far as I understood, they actually don't know that they're here for the eternal life, right? Because everyone gets really excited afterwards. And there's even an old lady that explains it, that it's either life or death, as if she understood properly. So did they actually know when they were going in?
Actually, you might be right. And they might have said something special rather than saying exactly what it was.
I just thought it was terrifying, just imagining arriving and then them saying like, oh, well, it's life or death. One of you gets immortal, the rest of you die. And I'm like, oh, great.
The floor bottoms out and loads of people just fall down.
Yeah. And like, this is a very famous theater, right? So I was really shocked to find out that apparently the floor just opens up. And like, how long has this theater had this intention?
It's not just those floors, because it happens later in different places.
That's a good point. Oh, no.
Like, way to thin out the herd. Like, you won't know who falls in.
It's also really funny that the entire theater is just built to, you know, sail away.
Yeah, you gotta wonder if it was built on the ship or in these puzzles. No, actually, before that's Inspector Grosky's pushed off the boat by this little girl.
I have to say that I really appreciated every time the Detective Grosky appeared. He seemed like a nice bit of comedic relief and kind of a typical character from animes, of course, but I really appreciated his presence.
Yeah, it was like he just got out of the water and a little girl pushes him. Just in bucket. But it's like, no problem, you did it once, I'm sure you're gonna come back.
But they start being given puzzles, and the big 001-002 that we start seeing is a thing from the games. Not sure if any of the games go up to 100 or over 100 puzzles, but
I thought the same thing. Like, did he plan for the future?
It was just in case there's only one person eliminated per puzzle.
And then we see like four puzzles in the entire damn thing.
Let's just keep in mind that we didn't even reach double digits.
I bet he was so mad by the end. Like, I prepared 999 and they only did four. Fuck. What did my life come to?
The second puzzle that they have to solve is go to see where the biggest crown is. Now, the first puzzle had a strict time limit, find the oldest thing. And they solve that by standing in the main area and looking up at the sky, where you can see the sky, which is the oldest thing. And the second thing is go where you can see the biggest crown. Now, it turns out the theatre and ship are shaped like a crown, which, you know, Professor Layton and Luke kind of tell everyone. Some people get off the boat in these life rafts, and everyone else is left to be dropped down opening floors. The issue I had was, why did the second puzzle not have a strict time limit?
I don't know.
Tell me, Arturo, tell me.
I don't know.
I guess the villain might have been preparing the other 900 puzzles to...
Just lost track of time.
He was, like, preparing himself to show the puzzles, all the other puzzles, and he was like, this one's gonna take them a while, let me check everything else is correct.
While they're on the boats, we're introduced to some of these characters. There's an actress, there's a sports guy, there's a sea captain. I used to be... The guy who's dressed up as sea captain says, I used to be a sea captain. No.
I thought it was just a fashion statement.
I was glad he said that, because I thought he was like a doorman or something.
There's another one who... athlete says... this is his exact quote. Here's what's left of my leg. And he shows us, and it has a scar. And it's just a normal leg with a scar. What do you mean, here's what's left of your leg?
Let's just talk about the fact that he's like, here's what's left of my leg, and I need eternal life if I'm ever to get better. I'm like, but we don't know if the elixir is going to heal your leg. And also there's a guy that's literally said, oh, I have 6 months to live. And apparently you just want it for your leg. It's like, I don't know, Jesus Christ, so selfish.
I mean, I think he meant that he wanted to stay young to have enough time for his leg to heal so he can still play. Because if his leg didn't heal, once you reach a certain age, you probably don't play sports anymore.
Well, to be fair, the older you get, the longer it takes for things to heal. Like, I scalded my arm on a hot pan 3 months ago, and it's still there.
Oh, I'm not even no. four. Oh, no, my gosh.
You need eternal life, Ace.
I need eternal life, so what's left of my arm will heal.
Maybe call Professor Layton.
Once the antagonist decides that they're far enough and can see the theater as a crown, he activates the automated systems and the boats just zoom off. Meanwhile, Grosky is still in the water running away from sharks. And the survivors because nobody on the boat, theater ship actually died. They just fell into a submarine, which then goes zooming past Grosky, and the ship explodes.
And can we talk about the apathy of everyone else on the ship? Professor Layton just sees everyone blowing up, and sure, he covers Luke's eyes, but there's not like any horrors or like, oh no, the people, they're just like, oh, okay, cover the kids' eyes.
I mean, he probably thought they were fine. Like, did you see the inspector guy? He survived.
He jumped into the water of sharks.
He survived against sharks for like 20 minutes by himself. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, Professor Layton is a smart guy. He deduces everything, so he probably thought they would be fine even if the thing exploded.
But like, throughout the entire puzzles, the first two puzzles are the deadliest ones, and they're like, oh, people are not going to make it, and Professor Layton's just casually strolling, and telling people like, oh, let's band together. Like, it's the sky, everyone should stay together so no one dies. He's like, no, don't tell them. In fact, Luke says, oh my gosh, there's one, oh my gosh, in the board in front of the ship. And then he just stays quiet and lets everyone else be confused. And he's like, no, that's what they want you to think. It's actually the big ship. That's the one. And it's like, you're a sociopath.
To be fair, people couldn't have died because it's a rated U for Universal movie.
But Layton doesn't know that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now. And now that I look at him, those dead eyes.
Yeah, it's just messed up. I did appreciate, however, that it did feel like most of the puzzles were actually solvable, because they didn't say like, oh, the oldest thing, and they chose some random fossil. But if you actually thought about it, it's like, oh, the roof is open, and probably is the sky. So most of these actually felt like you could play along, even if I didn't do a very good job at finding out what they meant.
My guess was the moon.
Well, that's actually a really good one. You won.
You're making an assumption. Did he check that the universe is actually the oldest thing?
The Earth is only 6,000 years old.
Well, is it?
Did he check that? Like, we take that for granted, but we don't actually know.
But isn't supposedly every atom the oldest thing in the universe? So isn't technically everything the oldest thing in the universe?
Exactly.
Being a bit philosophical for a podcast.
Did he just read some book and it said, oh, the universe is the oldest thing? Yeah, that seems like that seems right. Let's do that. Let's not question it.
We do check in with the assistant who's gone to speak to some guy, I forget why. There's a fossil hanging in the air which is connected via ligaments, you have to assume, from the way it moves, because fossils don't move like that. They are bolted together in place.
That's a really interesting piece of information. Thank you for sharing that.
I was into dinosaurs when I was a kid.
Was?
Wait, are you referring to the guy that she went to see as a fossil, or was there an actual fossil?
There was a fossil hanging above.
Okay, I didn't pay attention to that.
I did not see the fossil.
Her hair brushes against it. It's this giant dinosaur skeleton hanging. But yeah, I can't remember why she went to see that guy.
Well, she's talking to them about their daughter that appears to be missing. So I think she was just working a separate case from Professor Layton. As far as I understood, I didn't really have any information, but the questions, she's just mostly talking about a missing child. And that's how she finds out the big twist in the end. Well, actually how, oh my gosh, I forgot her name.
Melina.
Melina, there you go. That's how that's how she finds out that the girl that supposedly is Melina is actually a kidnapped girl, and it's not actually just like a reincarnation or anything.
I think that's that she went to see the parents later, and earlier she went to see the fossil guy? Is that right? Or am I making that up?
Oh, I do believe so.
And I think the old fossil guy, the old fossil that also has fossils in his place, when they were driving over at the start of the film, they mentioned that it's Professor Layton's teacher.
Yeah. You're totally right. He sees the fossil guy. No, Ace is right. I do think she sees the Nope. Okay, I give up.
We'll move on. The life rafts arrive at an island, and there's some food left out, and I would definitely trust that food.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The freaking guy says, oh, I'm famished, and he serves a wine. And there's this lady, she's like, what if this is another puzzle? He's like, I don't care. He's like, dude, you have 6 months to live. Do you really want to eat that right now? Like, control yourself.
I mean, if I was hungry at that time.
I mean, you have to assume that they ate something. But then again, it is daytime after this.
Yeah,
and they were
asleep.
Yeah, never mind. No, I was going to say that it was in the same day, but never mind. They've gone eating about, like, around 12 hours, I could say. So I guess I can understand it.
Yeah, but the food isn't a puzzle. And then they're attacked by wolves, which also is not a puzzle. But the wolves were definitely set after them by the person who set up the puzzles.
Well, although the food isn't a puzzle, I felt it was more of an attempt for the bad guy to keep them in that general area while the wolves then guided them off into where they were supposed to run towards so that they could see the castle.
What's the little thing on each wolf's ear was like that a mind-controlling device?
I think that's just the design of the wolves.
They had like a metal thing.
We never get any details about the wolves, just, hey, there's wolves.
Well, when Emmy is fighting them later on in the movie, she actually breaks one of the ears off. And I'm not sure if the wolf stops fighting after that, but it does have some form of importance because she does hit it away from its ear.
Well, they say when the wolf first arrive and looks trying to use a special skill, which is talking to animals, and it doesn't work, and they say that they must be controlled by someone. So I was wondering about that. Sorry.
No, so that's fair.
Also, this is a stupid fucking skill. I don't think he actually has it. I think he just thinks he does because he's a stupid little kid.
Oh my god.
He does have it in the games, at least the mask one that I played, because, okay, as you're playing the game, you unlock some mini games. You solve a puzzle that gives you a robot, a little toy robot, and then there's a mini game where this robot can move three spaces a time, and you have to get it into a specific space and avoid these things that are trying to knock you down. And another one of the mini games is you get a bunny rabbit using Luke. You have to train it to take part in a dramatic performance. No, I'm not kidding.
I love this so far.
When you tap on the bunny, it will speak to Luke, and Luke can speak to it, and you teach it tricks, and it's basically a Nintendog.
Oh, then I am completely wrong, and the shit kid is redeemed.
But yeah, they go and solve this. Wait, is it a puzzle? They trap themselves in these
cages,
wicker baskets.
Yes, wicker baskets. And using the wicker basket, they escape from the wolves because wolves can't get through these massive, massive holes inside the wicker baskets.
I assumed it was more that they were conditioned to fight whoever was outside of the Whisker Basket since they were being controlled.
That's a possibility. And then, for some reason, Leighton and his two associates just trip over and have to leg it.
Why didn't they just turn around the basket like it's...
Yeah, just get back
it's
under
the same. Basket. Oh, it's like it's not that heavy. Come on.
It rolled over so easily. Just pull it back. Pull it back.
And the puzzle is you have to cross the river and there's just this wooden bridge that they can easily walk across. So, three or four of them manage that while Leighton and the others leg it. And they find a shed. And inside the shed, they create a helicopter.
It's like a natey moment, like comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Out of a chainsaw, a barrel, and other odds and sods, they create a helicopter. And then someone says, "Go, make it go faster." And Leighton goes, "This is as fast as it goes." And not 30 seconds later, they're going like 50 miles an hour. Crash.
I mean, he just invented it. He doesn't know what it's capable of.
I suppose this is as fast as it goes upwards, but not in a straight line, it seems.
I love how it's just basically humping like a frog the entire time. And of everything in the movie, even the kid talking to animals, this is probably the most unrealistic one.
More unrealistic than the kid talking to animals.
I don't know, that's a pretty gray area, to be honest.
But they find their way to the top of Castle, and then the unofficial fourth puzzle, because we don't get a 004, I don't think, is find the correct door out of these four. Professor Leighton says, "Yeah, you guys go that way. I'm going off in this direction."
Which I never actually understood why he even does that. No. Because, right? They don't explain it. I had an inkling that maybe it was because they decided to follow him, but he seemed kind of shocked. And then, like, what? He went to the wrong one and eventually ends up in the proper bedroom? It's like, what happened here?
He just decided to do some espionage. And yeah. He was like, "I'm not playing your games anymore."
We don't see how he wound up in the bedroom and talks to the little girl? And it's just something he does. Now I'm here. We do see that the boat explosion has been found by the assistant in a biplane. And she picks up Grosky, who's just in his pants.
And he loses them right after.
And he loses them.
But then he has clothes. Clothes in the next scene he appears in for some reason, but he still doesn't have his pants. He finds them at the end of the film.
He does. He finds them in the end credits or something.
Would you like for him to appear butt naked?
I mean, kids find butts hilarious, so.
That's a good point.
I mean, just have a leaf float by him whenever you can see him from the front and you don't need to show it. But now that he lost his pants and he still has clothes on, you're thinking, his ding-a-ling is swinging all over the place all this time.
One thing that I didn't understand is, how did Emmy, the assistant, find anyone to begin with? She only gets wind of what happened to the Crown Patone through a news piece when she's talking with... when she's with the professor. And then through that, she somehow gets telekinetic powers and finds the island?
I suppose she found the shipwreck because she extrapolated if the ship sailed in a straight line, she'd just follow that straight line.
Oh, and then he tells her where the other submarine went. Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, he tells her the submarine went in that direction, so presumably again in a straight line. Plane's very fast and doesn't need refueling because, like, 20 minutes later, she's at the island. We see some fighting when the assistant and Drisco arrive. Grosky arrive, because the singer, the so-called diva, and Luke had been captured. So we see a fight scene, and then everyone's reunited, and then we find out like the whole plot. The guy who created
the Detrigan.
Guy who created the Detrigan is trying to put his daughter mind into someone else, and it's all very vague and very strange because you have to play this specific song to do it while it's connected to another machine. Or
I thought the playing music was incidental. It just did both played music and it held
which is the worst part. I think you just have to connect it and pull the lever, and then that's when the memories get updated.
Yeah, he was like, I'm going to play music while doing that, maybe. I like music.
I mean, I could read a book while I'm doing it, or I could play some music.
Some sick tunes to my daughter's resurrection.
It goes wrong. There's a fight. The real villain, it seems, turns out to double-cross the other villain.
The guy who made the piano.
Yes, the guy who made the piano. Jane, oh my gosh. Gene Disco? Point is, one thing that confused me was, I understand what Mr. Whistler's doing is bad, because it's kind of like, you know, kidnapping another human and taking their body to create, you know, another human. But what Gene Disco is doing isn't so bad. He just wants her to revive so he can have her singing. So why is everyone trying to stop him?
Yeah, his plan is to resurrect this entire city. Well, not resurrect, but bring it out of the ocean using the Detrigan and the singing. But as we...
Oh, it becomes an action epic at that point. It becomes Sonic the Hedgehog movie, to be honest. Yeah. Sorry I interrupted you.
But... No, it's fine. It's just hard to summarize this bit effectively. Basically, the song doesn't work, so he decides to just destroy everything with its giant mech that he happens to have put the Detrigan on top of.
Which was also part of the castle.
Which is also activated by the Detrigan.
Which is, by the way, was on the ship.
presumably they put it in the submarine. But it's...
No, but like, if this is this is the control to the giant, they just disconnected.
It turns out that the song that he was playing was the wrong song, because he worked out how to do two songs, but he had to flip this thing upside down to make a third song. But yeah, big action epic, and then play the song, and this city raises from the deeps, and things start to explode.
Jane Disco also gets really angry for some reason at Professor Leighton, despite the fact that he helps him accomplish his goal.
Yeah, that's why I was confused. Well, not confused, but I wanted to bring up this. In the dub, you never hear Professor Leighton's first name, which is Herschel, by the way.
I had no idea, oh my god.
However, in the sub, Driscoll does say Herschel.
Well, to be fair, it was made by Japanese, and they use first names very rarely, only when they are super familiar with each other.
Yeah, that's true.
It's still an interesting little factoid.
Yeah, of course.
Afterwards, we get this scene that was traumatic, of just like Melina just being like, I have to go, Dad, and it's like, oh no. Very unexpected death themes in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to mention one of my notes. During the epic fight with the mech and Professor Layton's in the helicopter, why does it explode so violently?
I figured dramatic purposes.
You mean when the drill hits it?
Yes.
Well, the helicopter was made presumably mostly out of wood, and the drill was spinning, causing the wood to set on fire, and so the explosion was much bigger because of that.
The explosion was bigger because of fire, okay.
Yeah.
That is how fire works.
Yeah. Fire.
Yes, we're treated to this sad scene, and like there's this missing city that's been resurrected. I mean,
just because
who's getting credit for this discovery?
I'm assuming Professor Layton, which is why I think the scholar was so upset with him.
To be fair, he was the person who did the resurrecting, so.
And found out the puzzle of the three songs.
But anyway, that's that brings us to the end of the movie with a return to the present day, quote unquote, because it's in the past, where they have to go off and solve another mystery. So was this a good adaptation?
I mean, the game is a puzzle game, and I felt like it actually, I thought so, personally.
I mean, there was mysteries, but like I never felt like I was along for the ride on those mysteries. Like I couldn't follow them. I couldn't figure out. A few times I could be like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense," but the other times was like, "I don't know where this came from."
And other times they were crossing a wooden bridge.
One time we were getting all philosophical and what's the oldest thing in the ship, and then the other times you just had to take steps.
To be fair, it was exactly like that in the game, because some puzzles are really tricky because they are kids' games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all ages games. And the first puzzle of the mask one, whatever it was, you have to move these wires to untangle someone who's got entangled in some balloons. And I managed it in 4 or 5 moves. I gave it to my daughter to try, and after 10 minutes, she was frustrated and unable to do it.
That's so cute.
And then there's other puzzles where I was struggling to do them.
Did you give those to your daughter too?
I did not.
Solved it.
Imagine if she solved it.
She probably would.
She was like, "You're so stupid."
But yes, in all respects, even down to the animation and voice acting, it was a very good adaptation.
I really did like it because the games do seem to have a lot of dialogue present, and like that's what a movie is essentially. And I don't know. I felt it was pretty good.
That, I guess that takes us to our verdicts. Is this a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a meh? Arturo?
Thumbs up.
And Gozagoz?
Thumbs up.
And myself, thumbs up. Because, yeah, I really quite enjoyed it.
Despite the fact that it was even the longest one, it actually, like, it's quite surprising that we all liked it.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. Thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge. And better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrid.com, finding us on social media, or listen to the Greencast podcast. And until next time, game on.